You're listening to The Voice of Russia in London with me, Juliet Spann. On the 21st of October this year, Savita Halepanava, a 31-year-old woman who was 17 weeks pregnant, was admitted to a hospital in Galway in Ireland. Doctors acknowledged that she was having a miscarriage, but over the course of 3 days, they reportedly refused to terminate the pregnancy because they could detect a fetal heartbeat, citing Catholic Ireland's near-total ban on abortion as the reason. Her husband, Praveen Halepanava, said the hospital told them the fetus was not viable, but they could not perform an abortion because Ireland was a Catholic country and the fetal heart was still beating. During the next several days, Savita developed septicemia and multiple organ failure, which led to her death on the 28th of October 2012. Her husband said he has no doubt that she would still be alive if she'd been allowed an abortion. On Wednesday this week, thousands will gather in Dublin in vigil for Savita and to demand abortion legislation. Five national referendums have been held on the topic in Ireland in the last 30 years. Joining me in the studio is Anne Scanlan, Education and Media Officer from Life Charity, Kate Smurthwaite, Vice Chair of Abortion Rights UK, Dr. Roselle Ward, who's on the telephone from Northern Ireland, is a GP and member of Christian Medical Fellowship, and Mara Clark is the founder and director of the Abortion Support Network. How likely, then, is the death of Savita likely to lead to a change in the abortion laws in Ireland and Northern Ireland? First of all, I'd like to ask you, Mara, what impact will this have?
Well, I think this case comes sort of in the middle of what's been a groundswell of pro-choice activity in Ireland and Northern Ireland. Abortion Support Network isn't a campaigning organization. We provide practical support, but we, of course, hear about what's going on. And there was a large rally in July. There were a couple of large rallies at the end of September, including the largest pro-choice rally in Dublin in 20 years, asking for legislation on the X case, which would clarify what cases doctors can intervene to save a woman's life. And then with this case coming so closely on top of that, and the fact that, you know, thousands and thousands of people took to the streets last Saturday to ask for legislation on the X case, which just to be clear, will only make it possible for, you know, it's only going to clarify what a risk to the life of a woman means. It's not going to be some big liberalization of the abortion law. It's just going to clarify what a risk to the life of a woman means.
Can I just say, in just ask you maybe to explain what the X case is for our listeners? I know that in 2010, the European Court of Human Rights ruled that Ireland must clarify the terms under which abortion is legal. And the X case relates to a girl that was raped in 1992.
The case was heard in 1992. And it was a 14-year-old girl who was, I believe, pregnant not only from rape, but from rape by a family member. And they were prevented from leaving the country for a termination, even though the girl was suicidal. And that was when they said, okay, we have to say that abortion is legal in cases where the life of the woman is at risk. But as you've said, numerous successive governments have failed to legislate on this case. And the European Court of Human Rights ruled in December 2010, so almost 2 years ago, that the Irish government needs to clarify. Again, all they're asking for is clarity on what a risk to a woman's life means. But because there's been no clarity, there's this ambiguity where doctors really just don't know when they can perform an abortion and when they can't. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think that if they were to perform an abortion when they were not allowed to, they could go to jail.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly the problem right now, is that the law says that if a woman's life is at risk, doctors can perform an abortion. But because the guidelines haven't been clearly laid out by the Irish government, many medical professionals simply feel that, you know, it's not clear. They know if they go ahead and operate to save a woman's life, the guidelines do not protect them from going to jail for that. So that's why we literally don't see these things happening. And that's exactly what was going on with Savita Halepanava, is that, you know, clearly her life was at risk. That's, in retrospect, sort of frighteningly and starkly obvious. And, you know, And immediately the response has been, oh, but it would have been legal to save her life by doing it. Well, according to the law it is, but according to the medical guidelines, professionals who perform that operation are not adequately protected. And the European Court of Human Rights has told the Irish government now 2 years ago that they are contravening people's human rights by not making clear guidelines and publicising them. So, personally, I'm very hopeful that they will now legislate on the X case and will now provide those guidelines for medical professionals. I think that there's still a very, very long way to go, but it would certainly be one small step in the right direction.
Kate Smurthwaite, Vice Chair of the Abortion Rights in the UK there. And I'd like to now maybe come to Anne Scanlan from the Life Charity. You've heard here from Mara and Kate, and we will get to you, Dr. Ward, shortly on the phone. But in light of Savita's case, will this change what's going on in Ireland, and where does Life Charity stand on it?
OK, first of all, we need to be very, very clear that we have no idea why Savita died. The pro-abortion lobby have clearly jumped on this. And it's going to take about 3 months till we have a report. We have no idea whether an abortion would have saved this woman's life or not. That's the first thing to say. Morris says it's just about clarifying the X case. It won't liberalise abortion in Ireland. I think that's the real fear, is that this will just open the floodgates. As you quite rightly say, there's been a groundswell of pro-abortion campaigning over the last few months. I think it needs to be very, very clear. I think this does need to be clarity about when abortions can and can't be performed. But we do need to be clear that if a woman's life is at risk, it is not illegal. And you say there's no guidance for doctors. The Guide to Professional Conduct and Ethics for Registered Medical Practitioners states that under current legal precedent, an exemption includes where there is a clear and substantial risk to the life of the mother arising also from a threat of suicide. And I think this has been one of the main stumbling blocks. And I think one of the main reasons they're, been avoiding clarity, if you like, is that risk of suicide is kind of so open-ended. You know, in this country now, 98% of all abortions are basically done on mental health grounds. And this risk of suicide, it's really hard to ascertain how real this threat is. I mean, abortion was legalised in this country to help the hard cases. And now nearly 200,000 abortions are done every year. 98 of those for the physical or mental risk to the mother, and 99.6 are for mental health reasons. So essentially, what we call the social clause. So whether we like it or not, a liberalisation of any abortion laws, whether you like it or not, opens the door to other abortions. I do think it's difficult for doctors if they don't know when it's legal and when it's not legal. A doctor clearly has to make a judgment at the time about whether that woman's life is genuinely at risk. But I actually think what's happened here with the pro-abortionist is to be paraded. The pro-abortion parade.
No, pro-choice.
Pro-choice. Then call us pro-life. Parading this poor grieving man around.
Dead because of your activities.
Ridiculous. Case, you're being ridiculous now. Until you know the facts of the case.
Well, I've
She died of septicemia. Clearly, there was some problem. We don't know what that
occurred
from.
Which was cervical dilation. That's what had gone on. Was that the cervix was dilated because miscarriage?
I'm judging a case. They're not facts because we don't know the facts.
These are the facts that have been disclosed by her family.
What's got worse is the husband is now saying he won't even cooperate with an inquiry. I don't know if that's being urged by the pro-choice lobby. But what we need to do is we do need to get to know the facts, because clearly we want to make sure this never happens again.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia in London with me, Juliet Spare. And we're talking about the tragic death of Savita Halappanava, who died in a hospital in Galway in Ireland. Her husband believes it's because she wasn't allowed an abortion. Joining me is Anne Scanlan from Life Charity, Dr. Rizal Ward, a GP and member of the Christian Medical Fellowship, Mara Clark, founder and director of the Abortion Support Network, and Vice Chair of Abortion Rights UK, Kate Smurthwaite.
If we sit around and say, well, we don't know the facts, we're also ignoring Savita herself, because Savita Halappanava herself was a medical professional. She was a dentist. She knew a great deal about medical situations. And she believed and clearly stated repeatedly to doctors that the only way to save her life would be to perform the termination. She asked for it over and over again on the basis not that she didn't want the baby, because she desperately wanted a family and she was very much looking forward to having a family. She asked for it because she knew that medically it was the only thing that would save her life. So So to suggest that we don't know the medical situation here, of course there's an inquiry. But in fact, the Halappanavar family have deliberately published the facts and gone public with the story because they want to raise this issue and they want to talk about it.
Now, Dr. Ward, first of all, I suppose you could, if you could provide a perspective from a working GP in Northern Ireland on the guidelines that doctors do have and your thoughts on Savita's death.
Well, I have to say, first of all, thanks for the opportunity. I do have to agree that we, no matter how much we jump up and down, we don't know the facts. We know that what has been reported was that she died of septicemia. The exact cause of that, we have to wait till official reports come out. We do have what her husband, in this very tragic case, reported was that he was said she was leaking fluid when she came in, and he was told that when she was examined, there was some cervical dilatation. So those are the facts as reported by him. But I think we can't jump to any other conclusions until we have the official report. And all that has been officially released up to now has been that she died of septicemia. With regards to the situation in Ireland, and I have to say the Republic of Ireland, because I live in Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom, as we've already said, abortion remains illegal in Ireland under Section 58 and 59 of the Offences Against the Person Act. However, in 1983, the Irish electorate did approve the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution and inserted the paragraph, "The state acknowledges the right to life of the unborn with due regard to the equal right of the mother, and it guarantees in its laws to respect and, as far as practical by its laws, to defend and vindicate their right." And the Guide to Professional Conduct and Ethics for Registered Medical Practitioners in Ireland, it does say as well clearly, in current obstetrical practice, rare complications can arise where therapeutic intervention, including termination of a pregnancy, is required at a stage when, due to extreme immaturity of the baby, there may be little or no hope of the baby surviving. In these exceptional circumstances, it may be necessary to intervene to terminate the pregnancy to protect the life of the mother while making every effort to preserve the life of the baby. So the law is, to me, I think the law doesn't need relaxing or loosening or liberating or anything at all. The guidelines are there. We have...
Well, why do you... Can I just interrupt you there, Dr. Ward?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't think it needs changing or liberalising, why is there such movement within other parts of the world, in India and the USA, that women have decided to demonstrate and hold vigils for Savita's death?
I have been very, you know, emotionally upset by the whole thing as well. But I think we need to know all the clear facts. And I think, and there may be those who don't like me saying this, but it has been jumped upon by those pro-choice, pro-abortion, whatever you want to call them, have jumped on this case and taken it and used it for their ends. I feel very sorry for Savita's husband in this. But I think we have to wait until the facts are clear. But the law in Ireland does allow for termination of a pregnancy where the mother's life is at risk, and their guidelines of their medical practitioners allow the same. Professor John Bonner, who one stage was the chairman of the Institute of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which represents 90 to 95% of Ireland's obstetricians, has said, "In a current obstetrical practice, rare complications can arise where therapeutic intervention is required at a stage in pregnancy when there will be little or no prospect for the survival of the baby due to extreme immaturity. In these exceptional situations, failure to intervene may result in the death of both mother and baby. We consider that there is a fundamental difference between abortion carried out with the intention of taking the life of the baby, for example, for social reasons, and the unavoidable death of the baby resulting from essential treatment to protect the life of the mother."
Actually, I'm going to come now to Mara Clark, because you've mentioned that the pro-abortion groups have jumped on this case. Do you feel that you've jumped on it? Is that fair?
Well, I just want to say a few things. First of all, I don't know the medical facts. I'm not a doctor. I was not in the room. So I don't know whether or not giving Savita an abortion would have saved her life. I do know that she'd already been told, "You're miscarrying this child." So giving her a termination wouldn't have caused any harm. Do you know what I mean? And so it's the ambiguity in the law that kept the doctors from possibly doing something that could have prevented harm.
I think we've got to be careful, because we said this was a wanted baby. And normal practice when you're miscarrying is not to carry out a termination, it's to let nature take its course. My very best friend was sent home having a termination, and her son went to university last year to start medicine. They were wrong. So what you have to be very careful is, don't immediately assume because somebody, they think somebody is miscarrying, to immediately intervene and give them an abortion when they might get rid of a wanted child.
Yeah, but this
I think
was,
you need to
this,
deal
this
on
was,
things on a case-by-case
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, Dr. Ward. Sorry, Dr. Ward. You did have some time earlier. I'm going back tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, it was 3.5 days and she begged for it repeatedly, according to her husband, whose word we do or don't have to take. Now, as far as the pro-abortion lobby jumping on this, you know, Savita's husband and her friends approached a pro-choice organization in Galway, approached them. We, you know, it's not that we have radars out and we know when women die in hospitals. Her family and her friends approached a pro-choice group, and that pro-choice group said to them very clearly, really set them up for, do you understand that if you go public with this, it's going to become a huge, huge story? And you'll find that the husband is still speaking to the press about this. It's not that, you know, we're not forcing him to do this. He approached the pro-choice group. But, you know, for me, I stand up, you know, I run an organization, a volunteer organization, I might add, so I don't make money from this. We help desperate, desperate women from Ireland and Northern Ireland who are trying to come over to have terminations. So while I can't quote the law chapter and verse, I am an expert on what happens to women when abortion is restricted and women are desperate to get one.
I mean, it's 2012. It feels almost archaic. We're having this debate about pro-choice and about women not being able to have the choice as to whether they can have an abortion or not. And this case of Savita has highlighted the debate once again and thrust it onto a global scale. You can't ignore that.
No, you can't. But you can't ignore the fact that actually abortion is illegal in 75% of the countries around the world. Admittedly, the remaining 25% are the developed world. But let's not assume that all progress is positive. I mean, Britain has one of the laxest abortion laws of any country. Out of the 16 of the 27 EU countries, 16 of them have abortion restrictions of 12 weeks or less. We have very, very lax abortion laws in the UK. And I, you know, you may have experience of women, desperate women, for, you know, not being able to access abortion. I've had the opposite. I worked as a counsellor with Life for 4 years and had many, many women who were basically having abortions because their parents or their partner was encouraging them to do so. And we had many of those women come back to Life who have gone through the abortion industry. And remember, it's an industry. And, you know, I just think, you know, they're trying to expand their market into Ireland now. And we see many, many, many women who come to us after they've had abortions. I've had very good friends who've had abortions for whom it was not a positive experience. So let's not assume that abortion, because what you're saying makes it sound like abortion is progress. We don't know. Personally, I believe it has done women a huge disservice, has not enhanced their lives one little bit.
Okay, I'll ask you then, Kate. Abortion is not progress. It does progress. It does not help women.
Well, of course, there are a number of women out there who've had a termination and then looked back on it and said, actually, in retrospect, I feel like I made the wrong choice. But and by the same token, there are people who've made other choices in their life and have looked back and regretted them. And I think we have to draw a very clear distinction between people being able to make a choice. And inevitably, when people have the freedom to make a choice, there will be those who look back on that choice regretfully later. But I think that's to suggest that that implies we shouldn't allow women the choice is absolutely horrifying. The truth is that lots and lots of women around the world find themselves in a situation of crisis pregnancy. There are lots of ways of dealing with crisis pregnancy. And in any civilised country, I think it stands to reason that it's my uterus and I should be the person who has the choice about what to do with it. If people are worried about regret, if people are worried about their religious convictions, etc., etc., then my advice to them is that perhaps abortion is the wrong choice for them. It's one of the reasons why Mara and I were so quick to jump up and not be described as pro-abortion, because I'm absolutely against any situation in which somebody's family, friends, partner, a doctor, anybody like that is pushing somebody to have a termination that they don't want. What we're all about is choice and giving women choice, because I think that as far as the campaign for women's rights generally goes, we can hardly start to talk about women's rights to all the things we want women to have in our society if women lack the most basic right, the right to decision, to decide what happens to their own bodies. To me, that is one of the most fundamental basic rights known to humanity, and it's tragic that there are lots of places around the world where women don't have that right. And that's why we see around half of the world's abortions take place illegally. You know, that's incredibly dangerous. Thousands and thousands of women around the world die because they're not able to access an abortion when they want one. And, you know, I see it definitely as progress that a woman is given the choice. I don't see it progress that anybody's forced to make a choice they don't want to. But of course, it's progress when people are allowed to make choices about their own bodies and about medical treatment. It's pretty straightforward.
Dr. Ward, then, how would you respond if there was a change in the clarification in the terms of when an abortion is legal and you were met by a woman who had a crisis pregnancy and wanted to abort her baby?
Well, I mean, I have, as a GP, been in the situations where women, young women have come in to me scared witless, I would say, that they have found themselves pregnant and absolutely panicking about what to do. And my first thing to say to them is, please do not make a decision in the heat of the moment and in the haste. And very often, discussing with a lot of them, there is very often pressure or perceived pressure from parents, boyfriend, partner, husband, whoever, that that of course you must have an abortion, or this isn't what I planned, or else the complete feeling of isolation, I don't know what to do. And actually, women in these situations need support and encouraging and discussion as to all the options. Yeah, I have to say that we are dealing with two lives here, you know, and I encourage women to say that there are other options to them other than the one that they are obviously thinking of.
But there aren't any options available, really, because
there are the options of carrying the baby to term and either giving it up for adoption and fostering. And many women have done that. And I have seen and dealt with women who have made that choice and are very happy that they did it. You know, they may have decided to keep the baby. I've had some women who were absolutely panicking at the thought of parents knowing about what has happened to them. And I said, look, just tell them, the response won't be as bad as you think. And they find that actually there is support there. And so I think as a society, we don't automatically jump from unplanned pregnancy equals abortion, but we should be saying, okay, two lives here, this wasn't planned, this wasn't wanted, but this is the situation we're in.
Okay.
How do we now help and support these women through these difficult situations that they're leaving? And not just at the time when the baby is, or through the pregnancy and to the time the baby is born, but afterwards. We have to value the lives of both individuals involved here.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia in London with me, Juliet Spare, and I'm joined by Anne Scanlon from Life Charity. Dr. Roselle Ward, a GP and member of the Christian Medical Fellowship, Vice Chair of Abortion Rights UK, Kate Smirthwaite, and Mara Clark, Founder and Director of the Abortion Support Network.
One thing I did want to say is it's nice to be in a group of women talking about abortion, because way too many of the panels that have been set up have been disproportionately men. So it is nice to be among women talking about what is, in a lot of ways, a woman's issue. You know, as far as women making choices and being pushed into abortions and things like that, when women contact us, and we strongly urge them to go see a family planning clinic. And the family planning clinics, by law, need to discuss their three options with them. And these are clinics based in Ireland and Northern Ireland, where they have to talk about parenting, adoption, or abortion. They have to lay out all the options. And we do have women who come to us who we can tell are completely frantic. And we're like, hey, hang on, we're on the phone. We're not counselors. We're not doctors. Go talk to a professional. Talk through all your options. And some of the women come back to us and some of the women don't. But this idea that women in Ireland can say, oh, I want an abortion, like I would say, oh, I want a chocolate ice cream. You know, when it costs between £400 and £2,000 to travel and pay privately for a procedure, this is not a decision that the majority of women can make in haste. And a lot of these women, you know, you talk about giving the baby up for adoption, you know, pregnancy is kind of a big deal, and if you're underemployed or unemployed, if you're a waitress, if you're in a cafe or whatever, you're going to lose your job. And that's just a fact. And a lot of the women who get in touch with us already have children. A lot of them are couples who already have children, who were taking precautions against unplanned pregnancy and birth controls failed and whatever. And they cannot afford the children that they have. It's not that they're like, oh, I don't know what it's going to be like when I'm a parent, because they know they have three kids. They just know that they can't have another one. And for the women who give their children up for adoption, power to them. But again, it's not for me to make that choice for somebody else. And I can tell you absolutely that some of the women who've contacted us before they found our phone number, because we're the only organization that provides financial support towards this £400 to £2,000 women need to come over. We're the only, and we're volunteers, so we can't help much. They have done some really desperate things.
The University Hospital Galway is carrying out an internal investigation. The Irish Health Service executive has also launched a separate investigation into Savita's death. Her husband said he wants to go to the European Court of Human Rights and wants a public inquiry. There is obviously calls for Savita's law to ensure that what they say is a dreadful and avoidable suffering of Savita's death never happens again to any woman in the country.
I think it's worth mentioning that Ireland has the lowest maternal death rate.
It used to.
No, Ireland has the lowest.
Two women died last month but in Dublin, and plus, and then plus you add Savita
for years,
in. Recount those numbers.
Well, but
out
we don't
of
know.
Date.
Seriously, we do not know why.
Out of date.
Kate, we do
even
not
if
know.
They are,
we do not know why Savita
even if those
died.
Numbers were true,
for
even
years
if those
it's
true,
been half.
The fact
of
is that Ireland's low maternal death rate is largely thanks to capitalism, to the price war between Ryanair and Aer Lingus, the fact that women have been able to scrape the money together to travel to England to access the services that
I
they've
put
wanted.
It down
you can't
to the
put
abortion
it down.
Industry touting for business in Ireland, making it possible for girls to come across. We have Mary Stopes in Dublin now. They're effectively a referral agency. I mean, we did have 4,000 women coming here last year for abortion. Actually, it's not huge numbers. I think if abortion isn't so freely available, I think for you to describe it as uncivilised not to have abortion, that's a terrible way to talk about 75% of the countries in the world. I don't think there's anything uncivilised about it.
It's not a human right.
The Irish people have repeatedly voted, something the opportunity the English people never had to do. The decision to legalise abortion in Britain was made by a handful of government ministers. When the Irish people have been asked to vote, they have repeatedly voted that they don't want it. We don't necessarily, I've lived in this country my entire adult life, so I think I can talk from a British perspective. I don't see it as progress. I really don't, and I've seen far too many women harmed as a result of abortion for us to assume that it is progress.
And yet here we are talking about somebody who we believe has probably died for lack of an abortion.
We don't know why she died.
That's exactly what her husband is saying. That's exactly why this case is being discussed.
Well, let's wait for the case.
For those people who are suggesting that we're jumping on the bandwagon here, I have to say, if I die as a result of an unjust law that contravenes my human rights, I want every man, woman, child on the streets screaming until it doesn't happen again.
I want a final word from everyone. If you could perhaps keep this case of Savita Halappanava at the essence of your final comment, I would appreciate it. I'll start with you, Anne.
Yeah, I think it would be tragic if we use a case that we don't know the facts of to change, certainly to slacken any laws in Ireland. I think it would be a very, very sad day for the women of Ireland.
Maura.
You know, when you take away all the details at its heart, this was the case of a beautiful, educated, professional woman who was in a hospital, was told she was having a miscarriage. She and her husband asked for an abortion. They were denied it, and then she died. That's this case.
Dr. Ward?
Yeah, certainly a very tragic case and one we wouldn't want to see repeated, but it doesn't. Until we know all the clear facts, we shouldn't be calling for a change in the law when there already is room in the Irish situation for termination if a mother's life is at risk.
And finally then, Kate Smurthwaite.
So when I heard about Savita Halappanavar's death, my initial reaction obviously was of great sadness and of great anger that the situation might have been allowed to arise like this. But I will say also that, I think a lot of us on the pro-choice side also felt a sense of pride, because I can say in all honesty that I've been there for the last 10, 15 years campaigning to stop this sort of thing happening, and our campaign will go on and continue to go on until we can be absolutely certain that women like Savita Halappanava are given the protection and the medical treatment that they deserve and that they are entitled to, that their human rights offer them.
I'd like to thank all my guests, Kate Smurthwaite, Vice Chair of Abortion Rights UK, Dr. Rizal Ward on the phone from Northern Ireland, a GP and member of Christian Medical Fellowship, Anne Scanlon, Education and Media Officer from Life Charity, and Mara Clark, Founder and Director of the Abortion Support Network.